Hey everyone, you're listening to The Fix, a podcast that shares stories of women and men who are innovating and taking action to advance equality in the workplace and beyond. I'm Camila Orente, and I'm a producer of this show. I'm also the CEO and co-founder of Human Group Media, an audio-first company for social change. We create and produce podcasts and audiobooks for nonprofit organizations, for-purpose brands, and thought leaders, like the host of this show, Michelle King. Michelle and I have been working together for more than 2 years now. And after 100 episodes of The Fix podcast, Michelle King is finally sharing her story. This week, Michelle's book, The Fix, Overcoming the Barriers That Hold Women Back at Work, goes on sale at all major retailers along with the audiobook. Here, Michelle shares why she decided to write this book 3 years ago.
So I knew I had to write this book after I'd spoken at a conference in Philadelphia. I had just arrived in America. It was about 4 years ago. And I had completed the first part of my PhD research. And what I found really surprised me. I found through my research that women are really, really capable. We are excellent leaders. We're great at networking. We're great at leading. We're great at managing. And this kind of surprised me because I had been fed a lot of the rhetoric around lean in, right? This idea that women need to do more, be more to succeed at work. And so when I was researching, you know, why it is that women aren't advancing at the same rate as men, I thought I was going to find that, you know, women were doing a whole bunch of things wrong. And when I found out that that wasn't the case, I thought, wow, you know, I really need to share this. And I really need to share this message with women. And so I went along to this conference in Philadelphia. I thought it would be, you know, an audience of maybe 200 people. I thought, you know, it's great to test something on such a small group of people. But because I was new to America, I just didn't really have a lot of time. I just moved here and my family, and I was doing my research. So I didn't have a lot of time to check out the conference. And I kind of just rocked up a little bit unprepared, but I had my research notes and what I was going to say. And when I walked in, it was the largest conference for women in America. There were about close to 15,000 women there that day. Michelle Obama opened the session. They had Brené Brown speaking. And so it was, you know, a bit nerve-wracking because here, you know, I thought it would be 200 and it turned out to be 17,000. But anyway, I got up and shared my message in total that day to about 10,000 women. And when I got up on stage, you know, I opened with the line that we don't need to fix women, we need to fix workplaces. And I could see all these women sort of staring back at me because it was not a message they'd heard before. And there was a lot of nodding. And as I finished, I could see this message had really resonated. And anyway, I'm coming off the stage and there's a whole bunch of women who are queuing up to speak with me. And one woman I could see out the corner of my eye was really red in the face, and she looked kind of angry, and it made me nervous. And, you know, as she approached me, I noticed that she actually had tears streaming down her face. And it was at that point that I realized that this message had really impacted her. And anyway, she came up to me and she put both of her hands on my shoulders, and she looked me sort of dead in the eyes, and she said, "I need you to know that what you said really changed me." And I was like, okay, you know, what did I say? Because it was quite a dramatic moment and I was really nervous. And then she said, you know, that I don't need to be fixed, that I'm good enough just as I am. I'm going to stick that up on my wall at work. And it was such an emotional moment for me because, you know, you do this research in your room, you spend years looking at things, trying to understand them, and you never really realize the real life impact that your message and your story can have. And so that was the moment that I realized that I had to share the story with women. I had to let all women know that they are good enough just as they are. And in fact, they're truly exceptional for surviving workplaces that were never designed for them in the first place.
Amazing. So you write about gender denial also as the greatest barrier to women's advancement at work. Can you just tell us what you mean by that and how do we overcome it?
So, you know, It's so funny, you know, when you're trying to tackle something, it's really important to understand what it is that you're trying to solve. And I know that sounds straightforward, but it's really not. When it comes to inequality in workplaces, you know, most leaders, most employees today, if you ask them, hey, how does this work in organizations, they probably wouldn't be able to tell you. And the reason for that is we've sort of been fed this lie, if you like, or this myth that workplaces work for everybody in the same way, right? They're a meritocracy. So everybody has the same career experience and everybody advances at the same pace because everybody really is the same. But that's simply not the case. You know, we're all different. And it's actually our difference that can create invisible barriers at work because organizations weren't designed for difference. They were designed to support sort of an ideal type of leader to succeed. And you know, that tends to be a white, middle-class, heterosexual, able-bodied male. But also importantly, it's somebody who's willing to make work the number one priority and engage in sort of dominant, assertive, aggressive, competitive, even exclusionary behaviors to get ahead. The problem is that most people don't fit this ideal and they don't want to engage in these behaviors to try and live up to the ideal. And so having that ideal standard in workplaces also means that the more ways you differ from it, the more barriers you're going to face trying to advance at work. And so that's what creates inequality in workplaces because there's this ideal people live up to it through their behaviors, and those behaviors over time become the entire organizational culture, right? They become our experience or the lived experience of workplaces. And so, you know, you have this whole system of inequality that's created through this outdated 1950s Don Draper ideal. The thing, though, that keeps it intact is that most of us are in denial about inequality because we buy into the meritocracy myth. So we believe that, you know, there's no such thing as difference. Well, there is. And, you know, success discriminates because the more you differ from this ideal standard, the more challenges you're going to experience at work. So the first thing, you know, for us to do in when it comes to this work is really tackling our own denial because we're all in denial to some extent. You know, I'm a white woman and I'm in denial about how my whiteness, which is something I have in common with Don, you know, creates challenges for women of color, right? And so I think denial is really the first issue we have to tackle before we can get to the work of solving inequality in workplaces.
So I guess this might be related to that one-size-fits-all approach that you just talked about. In your work, you've shared that feminism has failed women of color. Why do you say that? And what do you think white women like you can do to support and advocate for women of color?
I mean, if you look at sort of the history of feminism, right, it has by large been for white women, right? So if you just look at sort of really the right to vote and how women of color were excluded from that, you look at most feminist narratives and how experiences of women of color are simply erased from that. You know, that is white privilege in action, right? We're happy to fight for equality as long as it benefits us, but we kind of ignore all the other people who still remain on the sidelines. And, you know, that's no longer something I'm prepared to do as a white woman. I think it's about time we acknowledge our privilege. I think that means really understanding how our identity as being white creates benefits for us and challenges for others. I think it's also doing the work to understand our own racism. And, you know, when I say that, people sort of sit uncomfortably in their seats, but it's true, right? Like if you're white and you grow up in a society that is racist and values your whiteness, it's important to explore that and understand it. And I always say to people, you know, the areas that you're uncomfortable with when I'm speaking, those are the areas you have to explore, right? Like privilege and whiteness and racism, like those are the areas you've got to lean into and try and understand how is my identity or how is being white created privilege for me, which is really an unearned benefit as a result of my identity. Which really comes at the expense of other groups. And so for me, you know, what white women want from men in organizations, which is to understand the barriers, to remove them, right? And to understand their privilege and understand how that creates inequality for everybody else. White women have to be prepared to give that to women of color. Like that is our job. You know, if we're asking this from men, we've got to be able to do it for ourselves and not just for women of color, but for all areas of difference. We have to spend our privilege rather than living up to it by ignoring the challenges other people face, excluding others, marginalizing others, discriminating against others, ignoring inequality, perpetuating denial. Like those are no longer acceptable because we know how this works. And so it's up to all of us to be allies. And that means understanding our privilege and taking action to disrupt sort of day-to-day inequality moments as they play out.
So earlier you talked about, you know, the ideal worker, how have you seen, you know, both men and women sort of trying to live up to that standard? And how does that impact either the workplace or, you know, even their own lives?
Yeah, it's so funny, you know, I get this question a lot, particularly about how does this Don Draper ideal, this 1950s ideal standard for workers and importantly leaders, how does that affect men and women? And I think it's one of the biggest secrets in the whole gender equality work is that, you know, this standard actually doesn't work for anybody. It doesn't work for men and it doesn't work for women. You know, the standard as it plays out for men can be extremely challenging. Men are silenced and encouraged to sort of conform to this ideal through silencing, where they can't share the challenges that they experience at work. They can't share the stresses. They can't share the emotional strain that they encounter. They have to sort of silently live up to this Don Draper ideal, right? This breadwinner image, this very masculine ideal, this tough, this hardworking, sort of independent man that's kind of free from any emotional or mental stress. And that's simply not the case. Like, we all experience challenges managing home life and work life. We all experience difficulties at work. We all encounter risky situations or challenges where we could use social support. And so for men, living up to it is really incredibly isolating. Whereas for women, it's impossible to actually live up to the ideal, which is why in my book, I outline the 17 invisible barriers that women face in trying to live up to it, because it's simply impossible. Because women have not only an ideal standard at work that they don't fit, which is Don Draper, which is masculine, right? But they also have the standard in society where society says this is what good looks like for women, right? Being feminine, being meek, mild, nurturing, you know, soft. We want women to be gentle, to focus on their appearance, to focus on being a mother. And so living up to those two standards, it's completely incompatible and it creates tremendous challenges for women. And that's why it's so important, you know, for us to kind of do away with organizations that are designed for this one outdated ideal. And if you look at the history of organizations like Ford's Motor Company, you know, there's reasons why this ideal was sort of put in place way back when, because organizations were built by and for men, right? But this standard no longer serves us, you know, as we transition into what we're calling sort of the future world of work, right, with AI and robotics and nanotechnology and a lot of technological advancements. At least 60% of jobs we're going to be working with machines. And that requires a completely different way of working. It requires, you know, problem solving, collaboration. It requires innovation and creativity. It requires an environment that kind of values and supports difference. And so we need organizations to transition away from prototypes and more to organizations that are built on values, right? An organization that encourages people to be innovative, to be creative, to be collaborative, and to do that in a range of ways, right? But we're not constraining people based on outdated gender ideals.
So you also mentioned the invisible barriers that you outline in your book. Can you share a few more examples?
Yeah, so it's funny, you know, there's this idea in organizations that women experience sort of one glass ceiling towards the end of their career. And if they could just sort of get through that glass ceiling, they'll become leaders. And that's simply not the case. You know, research shows that women face barriers from the moment they enter workplaces right through to, you know, the day that they leave, because workplaces weren't designed for them. And a great example of this is the conformity bind. So exactly what I was talking about just before, where, you know, you have the Don Draper ideal standard, but you also have gender standards that society holds. And what happens is when women try to live up to Don, they might be seen as competent, but they're not seen as likable. To be likable, you have to actually fit the standard society holds for your gender. So for women, that's being meek, mild, you know, unassuming, focused on your appearance, very maternal. And so those are sort of attributes we associate with being a woman. So if women kind of ignore the Don Draper ideal and live up to being feminine, they'll be likable, but they won't be seen as competent. Unfortunately, to get ahead in workplaces, you need to be both competent and likable. But likability is actually even more important. So for women, they're caught in this continuous double bind. And that conformity bind women encounter the moment they enter workplaces, and that continues throughout their careers. We also see, you know, as women sort of move into the middle section really of their careers, they encounter something called the performance tax, where because they are not seen as capable or competent as men, you know, because we don't value men and women in the same way. That's essentially what inequality is. Women start on the back foot, so they're instantly seen as less competent, which means they have to work, you know, twice as hard just to be considered just as good as an average male, right? And that creates a lot of challenges in terms of access to promotions and access to pay. I mean, it's one of the major contributors to the pay gap is that, you know, we just simply don't pay women the same. for the same work that they undertake, right? And the reason for that is we don't value their contributions in the same way. And so this performance tax means women have to work so much harder just to try and access similar opportunities. And it really caps women's ability to advance. And so that, again, is something women experience throughout their careers, but generally it comes to a bit of a head around the middle section. The last example of the barrier that I think is worth sharing is, you know, there's this assumption that once women lead, they can sort of do this on their own terms and, you know, they won't encounter inequality. But actually, leading is an incredibly hard thing for women to do. To lead like women, it can be super, super difficult because you're going to encounter backlash. So it's something I talk about in my book. It's a really sort of significant barrier that women leaders encounter because simply being a woman and leading, you're defying the standards that society holds for what both women are meant to live up to as well as leaders. And so what we see is that women leaders encounter a lot of backlash from the people they report to, and that can include everything like undermining behaviors and people not supporting sort of their decisions to people sort of actively trying to undermine their leadership. And so, you know, this plays out for women. It creates a lot of mental and emotional strain on women leaders, and it can be very difficult to navigate. So, you know, simply leading like a woman can be very, very difficult, and defining what that looks like for yourself because, you know, we don't have a standard for women leaders. We've never been able to define that for ourselves. We've sort of been given don and told to live up to that, but that doesn't work for us. So I think for women leaders, it's actually probably the trickiest phase because you're having to do something that's not been done before. But we are seeing sort of bright spots and examples of it, like with Jacinda Ardern, the Prime Minister of New Zealand, who's leading in a very different way to other world leaders. She's focusing on creating a government that practices kindness and, you know, looks at the mental and emotional well-being of its citizens as a measure of success. So, you know, I'm hopeful. I think when women are given the freedom or take, you know, ownership of how they want to lead and sort of defy gender stereotypes and standards for what good looks like that are pretty outdated, they can do some remarkable things.
So, Michelle, we've worked together for over 2 years now, and I know based on your work and also what other podcast guests have shared on our show is that we need to engage men in the conversation. So there's two questions I want to ask. First is, what do you think are the challenges men face as they try to tackle gender inequality, and what can they do? So if they're starting to come in and, you know, they want to be involved and they want to be part of this, what do you think men can do?
Yeah, so I mean, I just want to, you know, I think diversity and inclusion initiatives to date have failed men. So I think it's important to acknowledge that. And the reason I say that is most of the initiatives are focused on fixing women. So looking at how do we mentor, sponsor women? How do we give, you know, coaching programs for women? How do we provide leadership development training for women? Everything is focused on women, right? Including targets. So including cut, copy, pasting women into leadership positions and hoping for the best, right? And none of these solutions work, and none of these solutions enroll men. In fact, all of these solutions end up, you know, creating a lot of resentment with men. And fair enough, really, because it's unclear, you know, how this benefits men, why they should get involved, what it is that we're asking for them, other than them giving up their seat. And that's not really equality, right? Equality is creating a work environment that values difference. And to do that, you know, organizations have to see individuals and understand individual needs. And men need this more than women do. And so, you know, when you look at the challenges that the Don Draper image creates for men, whether it's not being able to spend enough time at home and be a father, whether it's not being able to reduce your work hours for family reasons, whether it's not being able to speak up against harassment or bullying that either you witness or experience yourself in workplaces, whether it's having to pour in, you know, very, very long hours at work to not only demonstrate that you're living up to Don, but also to demonstrate your masculinity, because that's the thing about Don, you know, whereas for women, it's a way of living up to an outdated leadership ideal. For men, it's intrinsically linked to being a man. So when men sort of deviate from Don, they're deviating from a core part of their identity, which is their masculinity. And so that's why I always say, you know, the best thing that men can do to tackle gender inequality at work is really to think about what does it mean to be a man at work? You know, and I always check my husband on this. So a great example is with my husband, you know, the other day, you know, I was leaving to go to work and my husband was taking our son to the doctor and he said, you know, what do I tell my boss at work? And he said that because he wasn't sure in that moment, you know, how he could live up to Don while also having his sort of needs at home being met. And, you know, for me, I kind of really encouraged him to let his boss know that he had to take his son to the doctor because he's in a position of privilege being a white male, and it makes it that much easier then for women to share. And I, you know, had to explain it to him how this is a real barrier, what I call male silencing and bullying at work, where my husband would be teased or bullied if he had shared that. And by not doing that and being silent, it creates a barrier for women who, you know, are already in a marginalized position to share the challenges they experience. And you see this play out in a sort of myriad of ways in workplaces where women hide the fact that they have to go to pick up their kids, or they put fake meetings in their diaries, or, you know, there's all these ridiculous behaviors we all engage in to hide our identities and needs that we have outside of work. And that's just not what this is about. So for me, we have to enroll men. We have to explain to men how inequality doesn't work for them, the barriers it creates to their advancement and fulfillment at work, and talk about the fact that, hey, you know what, in cultures of equality, men are twice as likely to rise to senior leadership positions because we're no longer advancing a small number of people who fit this outdated ideal. And so for men, I think the number one thing they can do is really start to think about how living up to Don has created challenges for them and how actually gender equality serves to benefit them.
So, Michelle, you argue in your book, and you've touched on this, that gender equality isn't about women and it's not about men, but it's about creating an environment that works for everyone. So why is it so important to understand this, you know, concept, this statement, but also why do you think organizations seemingly have had such a hard time understanding it?
You know, I think the reason organizations have had a really hard time to understand it is because leaders have. So if you go to your organization today, in fact, I'd encourage all listeners to do this, ask your leader or your boss, your manager, right, if they understand how inequality works. And they'll probably tell you that they don't. And we can't fix something unless we understand how it works. And so the reason organizations don't understand that equality is really about making workplaces work for everybody is they don't understand that the inequality employees experience in organizations is a direct result of the leadership. Whenever I say that in companies, people look horrified because I'm calling out their leaders. But it's true. Leaders set the standard for behaviors at work. They decide what gets rewarded, what gets ignored, what gets endorsed, what gets supported. They determine the day-to-day interactions, right? The experiences that women are going to have at work. They determine how men are going to value and treat women, right? They are in positions of power, and that is also a privilege. It's a privilege to decide how your employees are going to experience the workplace. And so we need leaders to get that their job is to create an environment where everybody feels valued, and importantly, an environment that values difference, where we're asking people to show up to be themselves at work and to be valued for that. And until leaders get that connection, that actually leading is about creating a culture of equality. It's almost the definition of leadership, really, to use the capabilities, talents, and ideas and creativity that each of your employees has to benefit the organization and to truly value that talent. You know, that is what we're asking of leaders, and that is what is required to create cultures of equality. So that is why, for me, leadership is intrinsically linked to equality. And until organizations get that, we're going to be stuck with the same old tired diversity and inclusion initiatives.
So with International Women's Day coming up, I think it's the perfect time to really think about what we can all do. You know, how can we take action? So what are, you know, some of, you know, tips that you can share? What actions can listeners take in order to, you know, pay it forward?
Yeah. So look, I think there's three things people can do. You know, often when you say, it's not you, it's your workplace. For some people, that can feel a little disempowering because they love the sort of old school lean in school of thought, right? Where it's like, hey, you know, I can alone conquer this inequality and overcome the challenges of my workplace, and I'm enough, right? In terms of tackling inequality, I have no hand in creating. And for me, I sort of want to turn that on its head and say, look, it's actually a lot more empowering to see things for what they are and to realize that it isn't you, it is your workplace, and to take action to check your own privilege and become aware of your identities, become aware of how inequality works, be able to know the barriers so that you can name them when they play out in your career, and to really think about, hey, how's inequality shown up in my past? How's it going to show up in my future? What are the barriers that I might encounter? And importantly, how can I support my sisters. So how can I support other women by calling out the barriers when they experience them, by being an ally, by speaking up, by taking action? And this is something for both men and women. You know, if you know what the barriers are, if you know the challenges that women are going to experience and how that's different for women of color when they show up in workplaces, you can call them out. You can be an ally. You can help your colleagues navigate them. And importantly, if we come together and do that, we can start to hold leaders accountable for the cultures of inequality that they're creating. And that is so much more empowering than trying to lean in when, you know, actually the system is never going to support you no matter how hard you can try, because that's the truth about inequality. You can do everything right. You can get every qualification, the highest performance ratings, the most experience, and you can still not succeed because success discriminates. So that is why it is so important for us to become aware of how inequality works, know what the barriers are, and then make it a practice by being allies to one another at work.
So Michelle, we're down to our last question. I do want to ask you, when people purchase your book and, you know, as they read it, what do you hope, you know, they will take away from it?
So I know I can quit this work the day every single person knows how to put equality into practice as part of their job. So I hope that, you know, when women read this, they realize how exceptional they are. And also they realize the role that they can play in demonstrating the behaviors and practices that we want men to take. And I hope when men read it, they also realize how, you know, maybe they have been unseen and how inequality creates challenges for them and what it is that women are really asking them to do when it comes to champion equality. But most of all, I hope that all of us lead by holding our leaders accountable for the inequality that they're creating in workplaces by simply not leading. And so I think time's up. You know, that's my message to leaders. Like, here is a book that outlines how it's not equal, what all the challenges are, and most importantly, there is a chapter for every single leader on what they can do to fix workplaces. So let's hold those leaders to account. And you know, it's something I believe so much that I've written to 250 CEOs and given them a copy of my book and told them this message, that here it is in black and white, and we're going to hold these leaders to account for the cultures of inequality they're creating.
Michelle, such a pleasure. Thank you for all the work that you do and also for supporting us at Human Group Media.
Hope you all enjoyed today's episode. Just a quick note to let you know that I'm in New York City this week and would love to meet with all of you and hear from you. So please come to any of my book launch events at Be Social, Elevate, and The Wing. You can find out more at michellepking.com. Thanks again for tuning in, and I'll catch you all again next week.